Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugrupul people, the Yugambeh, Mulanjali, Kombamiri, Noonuccal, Quandamooka people. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you all. It's great to have your company. And it's another beautiful day. Blue sky, sunshine, a little bit of fog around this morning. But a beautiful day all up. It's looking like still no rain. And another warm one being predicted for tomorrow, some 27 degrees or so. So it's going to be a warm one. My guest in a little while will be Graham Atkinson is going to join me in a little while to talk about, well, Graham is the chair of Native Title Services Victoria. We're going to talk a little about the constitutional reform. Because I see there is a, I think it's been put on hold, the referendum, the proposal for a referendum has been put on hold by the government and First Nations people that are discussing this issue. So we'll get Graham to give us an update on that. He may know something, but I just see a press clipping come in, press release, that says the federal government has deferred plans to hold the referendum to recognise, they say Indigenous, I say First Nations people in the Constitution. Because, largely because, you know, it's not going to get up. Not going to get over the line, it appears. So, we'll call up Graham in a little while. Right now I've got a song from the Wurrumpi Band. But before I go into that, there's, where was that man? I left it behind. Young fellow by the name of, surname of Gardner, Scott Gardner, I think his name, making a name for himself in golf over in the States. Mother's a First Nation woman, very strong and proud of his culture, strong in his culture and very proud of being a First Nations man. I think he won almost $250,000 in prize money over the last 12 months. So he's a First Nations man in golf, or golfing, a golfer, First Nations golfer that's out there over in the States, making a real name for himself. So watch this space, eh? And we're looking at, as we heard on the Brekkie Show this morning, talking to Jamie, I think it was a young lady, talking to Jamie about the 30th anniversary of the Commonwealth Games. And that is being celebrated towards the end of the month. I think it was the 30th of September, the last day of September in 82. When the Commonwealth Games was opened. And leading up to that, we had Tent City in Musgrave Park being created. And it was, as you heard Warren Mundine say only a week or so ago, that was the best organised protest that he's been involved in. And it was quite well attended. So we're hoping to have Coco Wharton join us in a minute to talk about the anniversary and the celebrations, the plans for concerts and panel forums and things like that, and camping down there at Musgrave. They are looking to raise some funds and things. Got Wayne Wharton on the line to talk about the 30th anniversary of the Commonwealth Games. Wayne, welcome to the program. How are you?
Yeah, good, brother, good. And g'day to all your listeners.
You, tell us your mob, your country.
Yeah, I'm a Kuma man. My country's out on the Nebine Creek, between the Maranoa, down between Cullamulla and St. George and Bolland, down to Ebal, just over into New South Wales, down to the Kalgoorlie floodplain.
All right.
Basically, we're all Māori.
Now, the 30th anniversary of the Commonwealth Games, you're involved down there at the Tent Embassy at Musgrave Park. And you guys are trying to organise and mobilise people again to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Commonwealth Games. Tell us about what are your plans? What would you like to see happen, and what do you need to make it happen?
Well, basically, just for your listeners, I don't know too many people, and it was interesting what you were saying about Warren Mundine's memories of it too, because I guess 30 years ago we were all nobodies.
We were all young fellas. We were all young nobodies. We were all young nobodies.
Exactly.
I reckon I had plenty of fire in the belly. 30 years later, I've got plenty of belly and little fire.
I think it's just got burned just as fierce sometimes, but just not as often. It was a milestone. It was something that... It's something with other people have been on about for ages, that we don't honour our heroes. We're not writing our history now. We're not recognising the important milestones in our very, very, very young development in our dealings with this the new settlers. We don't document it enough, and we take it. And I think we take it very cheap, and we don't... it was a significant milestone, Tiger, that happened during that period 30 years ago.
We need to celebrate our achievements, that's for sure. What do you think was achieved with the Commonwealth Games, looking back on it?
Well, you're looking back of a lot of the people that were nobodies then. You look at Linda Burney. She was a nobody. Now she's a member of Parliament.
Warren Mundine,
the head of the Australian Labor, president of the Australian Labor Movement, Labor Party.
Yeah.
You had people like Wayne Goss, that was an Aboriginal legal service lawyer, become premier. Matt Foley became an attorney general. Terry O'Gorman becomes the most renowned person on civil liberties in the country.
It's a good point you make. Black fellas and white fellas.
Yeah, another name called Frank Brennan, Michael Mansell, young Michael Mansell, yourself. There's too many people, Marcia Langton's,
Monica Morgan now working for Amnesty.
Monica Morgan's, Jimmy Everett's, it just goes on and on, mate.
It does.
And Lionel Fogarty's and your mum and all them old people, the birth of the Elders Council here in Brisbane, old Jamie Arnold and mum and all them old girls cooking in the food tent. Do you remember that?
Yes, I lined up for many a meal there. Yes, I do.
Yeah, and I think it was a catalyst, mate. It was a catalyst of a lot of the medical centres, a lot of the organisations, the empowerment of communities, it was the overturning of the Aboriginal Protection Act in Queensland.
Yeah, that was repealed.
A young Bob Catter was the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, who gave back self-management to all the prisoner of war camps in Queensland.
Uh-huh.
You know, Cherbourg, Warrabinda, Palm Island.
The discreet Aboriginal communities.
Yes,
and
self-government. Mm. You know, these were major catalysts that came out of that period.
There was a young Bob Weatherall and a young Ross Watson out in the front line. We had Uncle Neville Bonner was there.
Placed in a very peculiar position.
Yep, he was, yes.
And and we had old fellow D-Mel there too. He was a member of the Parliament at the time, state government. So we had... it was massive change.
Mm.
It was a time it was there, and it wasn't just a time for Australia, it was, or Queensland, it was the Pacific Rim. We had decolonisation going on in Vanuatu. We had the French. We had the transition of power in Papua New Guinea. We had the honouring of the treaty in New Zealand. And the implementation of that, we had the Fijian situation, we had the Timor, the South Pacific, the whole Pacific Rim, was a time of change. The Chilean uprisings, it was really a time of change. And I think the Commonwealth Games was the first time that truly Aboriginal people had an opportunity to display their story to the rest of the world unedited.
How do you want to celebrate that? What do you want to see happen?
Well, we're very lucky. We're very fortunate, Tiger. With the young people that have come up and stepped up to the mark and stepped up to the plate, they weren't even born then. But yeah, the respect and the knowledge and the willingness to acknowledge and tell that story is overwhelming. And they're all out there, they're full of energy, and they want to go. What we're talking about is trying to run a program, and this has been something that hasn't been, this is something that's been developed since January this year, and that's one of the spin-offs to the NMC. And what they want to do is reenact the tent city in Musgrave Park, actually run the program. At this stage reads as a welcome the country on the Friday afternoon, march from Roma Street to the park on Friday morning, a rest, then the official business starts in the park, the flag-raising ceremony, the acknowledgement of the veterans through a dinner provided down the park, where we're inviting veterans, both black and white, that were participants in that, to be presented to the people and to talk a little bit. And then maybe a small concert that evening on the Friday night. And then the Saturday morning is full with, children's and youth activities, as well as two major forums, as well as some writers' forums and other activities that are being added to every day as we speak. And then it culminates with a Republic concert that night, the Rainbow Republic. And that's going to be a concert that takes place from 2 o'clock in the afternoon through to about maybe 10 or 11 that night. And we're calling for artists and other people that want to perform at that venue. And then we have an ecumenical service the following day, on the Sunday, and then a number of other forums and kids' activities, and then finishing with a combined forum at the lunch, over lunch on the Sunday. The council, after our, somewhat hostile interaction between the embassy and the council in our first interchange, has actually been working with them over the last 2 weeks, and for the first time in the history of anywhere around this country, they're actually partnershipping with us in this exercise and making the park available for camping and the tent city again.
That's certainly good news. What's the contact number for if anybody wants more information, wants to engage, wants to participate, make a donation?
Yeah, we're asking people to come down to the embassy and to register as a volunteer. We're asking people to come if they've got donations, whether it be food or tents or tarps, chairs, firewood, anything. I think you can, anything along that nature that could help out. We're looking for sponsors for certain things. It may be chairs, it may be tarps, it may be lights. But the contact number is 0408-064900. And there's also the station through Jamie has volunteered to take some numbers and refer information to us. That's really been appreciated. We're looking at maybe stages, people. We're looking at reenacting, trying to pull off the kitchen again, Tiger. We've contacted a lot of the men's councils throughout Brisbane and throughout the southwest to work as marshals and security. We're also contacting a lot of the elders groups, whether they want to come in and contribute to the general operation of it. But it's going to change. As you can remember back then, I think it was the way we ran our camp meetings and the way that resolutions were happened and the way we addressed problems was truly unique.
It certainly was, and the way bail money was raised was just unbelievable. When is the first event? What's your plans? Like, what's the agenda? When's the first day of activities?
It's going to be the 5th. It's going to be the 5th, the Friday.
That's Friday the 5th.
Yeah, but camping starts on the 5th as well.
Right.
On the morning of the 5th or the Thursday night before.
Okay.
People, especially for travellers. We've had supports with toilets and that sort of stuff. The 5th will be the start. That'll be the start with the march and forums over at Roma Street back to Musgrave, and then the official welcome and flag raising and the veterans' dinner and the veterans' concert on the Friday night.
So this is only a couple of weeks ago. We'll be closer engaged and in touch and have some dialogue happening where we can be promoting the developments along the way. Mate, look, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again in the lead-up to it, but we'll certainly be promoting the need for people to call you up and get involved.
Yeah. I think it's one... I just want to say that it's one way where we can get back to the whole... Everyone that calls this country home, it's one way of us being able to come back together and make them try and answer the difficult questions that the government can't answer.
It certainly is. The 10 Embassy certainly plays a major role in that regard as well. Wherever they're set up around the country, they are our information centres, yes.
Okay, mate. I appreciate your time and look forward to... And like I said, anybody that wants to perform, anyone that wants to speak... Anyone that wants to come and camp there and help out, we'd be more than welcome, and firewood and anything.
Good. All right, buddy. We'll let people know. Thank you very much for your time.
Appreciate that, and look forward to seeing everybody down there.
Yes, mate. We'll be there. We'll talk to you later on.
Okay, mate.
Bye now. Wayne Wharton. Bit of a noisy line there, but we had to persevere and get some information out there. It's... it can be big if we all join in, if we all get to put our shoulder to the wheel, shall we say. So you can call 0408 064 900 for any further details. You can also call the station and for any contributions and donations or whatever or information you require, call the station and we can try and put you in touch with the right people. If we can't find the right people, we'll have to be the right people on the day at the time. So, 30 years ago, like I said, I was there with no belly and plenty of fire. When we talk about fire in the belly, these days there's plenty of belly and little fire. How things can change. But there were some big achievements. It was, and like you heard, Warren Mundine did say that was the best organised protest that he'd seen and been involved in. It was very good. It's only a couple of weeks away. Make sure you mark it in the diary. People arriving on the 4th, setting up camp. All legal. All legal, approved by the council. And on the 5th, there will be the march. That's Friday the 5th. And October the 6th was a good day, that October the 6th, way back then. Probably a bit before then, too. Anyway, the march on the Friday the 5th. And then business there in Musgrave Park. Discussions and bands and things happening. My guest is Graham Atkinson, the chair of Native Title Services Victoria, also the chair of Jajarung, an Aboriginal corporation. Graham, how are you? Welcome to Let's Talk.
Yeah, no, I'm well, Tiger. Good to speak again.
It's good to have you on the program. You're also on the board of ILC, Indigenous Land Corporation.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I was one of the four newly appointed members last October. Yeah, so...
Very good.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Very good. Now tell us, constitutional reform, what's been your involvement or engagement in this regard?
Oh, it's just been as an interested observer, really. I attended some of the panel discussions that were travelling around the country There were a couple held here in Melbourne, so I went along there, and I was also asked to speak to the local Bendigo Reconciliation Action Group on the same issue, and so it's been as a interested observer, and then more recently the Traditional Owner Land Justice Group in Victoria held a land summit, and one of the key topics at that summit was the issue of constitutional recognition and also the referendum. I'd have to say, when I last spoke to you this morning, Tiger, I heard on 3LO, Radio National, that Jenny Macklin has decided to shelve the referendum.
Yes, I was going to ask whether that was my next question. Are you aware of it? I've got the press
sorry
release.
About that.
Yeah. No, no sweat at all. It's good to see you've heard it. You're on it, and then word is out there. The reason I'm seeing here, or my understanding, is that they don't believe the referendum will get over the line, and they need more time to generate the support, I suppose, or develop a better understanding out there amongst the voters. What are your thoughts?
I think all those points you made are pretty well on the money. As you know, the history of getting referendums across the line, Tiger, has been pretty slim. I think out of the 40, I've been told that there have only been 8 successful referendums since Federation. And, of course, one of those was the 1967 referendum, that historical decision that that was made. But look, perhaps it is timing. Perhaps it is the mood of the community. Whether it's in a bit of flux at the moment in regard to Indigenous issues. I think all that sort of goes into the mix, you know, as to why the minister has made her decision.
Rob Oakeshott, an independent member in the federal parliament, is a little critical of the decision, but he also states that without mass mobilisation in every capital city and country town, the issue would die away. He says, and I quote, "I do lament that we don't have the bridge walk bigger than ever before, and I do lament that organisations like Get Up, the union movement, and employer bodies, and all those who say they care, are not pushing hard enough on this issue right now." So that's Rob Oakeshott's views on things.
I think he's making a valid point. I'm always I'm a believer in actions speak louder than words, and all those support groups that you just mentioned, they've been a bit quiet on, you know, the lead up to this important referendum, and I appreciate the support that we get, the Indigenous community gets from other mainstream groups out there, but where the real support counts is when they put those words into action and really get behind important Aboriginal causes like this one.
Most certainly. Rachel Seward, Australian Green Senator, also says that there wasn't sufficient community support, and this went down. It would set relations with Aboriginal people back decades. She goes on to say there's been some work done, but not enough to engage broader Australia. So you'd have to agree with those comments of Oakeshott and Rachel Seward, really, at the end of the day, don't you? Not enough being done.
Look, I think they make valid points. I attended it was a launch of the Law Institute of Victoria's Reconciliation Plan a couple of weeks ago here in Melbourne, and they had a panel discussion on constitutional reform and the referendum, and there's mixed opinion out there about the whether or not the the referendum would have been successful. There's not the same sort of passion and enthusiasm that preceded the historical 1967 referendum. I can remember that. I was 19-year-old teenager back then, and I can remember, you know, the interest that was generated. I was coming out of a football game at the MCG in Melbourne, and they had the stands there. Supporters of the 67 referendum had these stands, and you walked past and they were handing out pamphlets and information, you know, on the referendum back then. But this time around, you don't see that sort of passion and enthusiasm, and it's a shame, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's certainly a different time. These 45 years after the referendum, it's certainly a different time and a different situation altogether. There is there has been a figure mentioned. Some $10 million federal government put into Reconciliation Australia to try and facilitate discussion and stuff. So there's a lot of, there is, one would think that that's a reasonable amount of money, but might need a lot more. I mean, there should be some public awareness stuff happening, promotions, buying media time to put up some positive points as to what it means. What does it mean to you? First up, there's some confusion about whether it's a preamble. Are we talking about a preamble? Are we talking about the body of the Constitution? Yeah. What would it mean? What would you like to see, and what does it mean to you for constitutional reform?
Look, constitutional reform for me, I think, means not tinkering around the edges, but sort of, you know, striving for fundamental change in the Constitution itself. I do have a view on whether you are achieving much when you put that acknowledgement or recognition in the preamble. And look, it's been done here in Victoria, the Victorian Constitution. I forget how long ago, but it went down that track and included recognition of Aboriginal people here in Victoria in their preamble. But I don't believe that goes far enough. And look, you always have to look at these events to see what benefits flow from them. And I'm not sure whether I've seen any benefits here in Victoria in its case of, you know, closing the gap, for example, whether the gap has decreased or whatever. So symbolically, it's probably a good a step in the right direction, but I think you have to cast your net wider and look at fundamental change to the body of the Constitution, you know, and not just the preamble. But, look, I'd have to say, though, Tiger, I think the panel did a good job with the resources that they had, and I think their intentions were worthwhile. I attended the panel discussions here in Victoria, at least the one in Melbourne, and it was well attended, I thought, and the way that the co-chairs. I think that was Martin Lieber and Patrick Dodson. How they ran the panel discussions was pretty constructive. So I think they've, you know, done a pretty good job. But then the minister's taken a rain check on the mood of the murder the electorate, and she's made a decision today.
I think it was a bit ambitious to expect or to commit to holding it during 2013. I mean, it'd take a while. Yeah. Now, let's look at the 67 referendum. What significant changes, were there significant changes, or what were the changes that happened in community, on the ground, in people's minds as a result of that. What are your thoughts?
Oh, well, it included, I guess the first thing, Tiger, was it included Aboriginal people in the count, the census count. Up until then, they weren't included. But it also gave recognition to Aboriginal people as being citizens, you know, equal citizens of the country. So I saw those as welcome changes, and important ones too, because you know, Aboriginal people, I know my ancestors and my grandparents talked about being excluded and being marginalised from all the things that mainstream society takes for granted. You know, the socioeconomic system, political system, they often, when I was growing up, talked to me about how difficult it was, you know, as an Aboriginal person or a First Nations person in a society that was controlled by the dominant culture, in this case, dominant non-Aboriginal culture. So, look, those two areas, the inclusion in the census count and also the recognising the citizenship rights of Aboriginal people were important milestones achieved then.
Most certainly.
Now, you may argue, sorry, yep. Tiger, you may argue that you know, well, what real benefits have come out of the result of the 67 referendum? There are Aboriginal people that would say not much has changed. I guess there are others that would say, oh yeah, they've seen some changes, at least to some of the government policies that have come after the referendum. But that's my view on it.
Hmm. Yes, no, they certainly can put a figure on and say, you know, oh, there's an increase in the population of First Nations people. We're now all looking at somewhere between 4 and 5%, getting close to 5% of the population, and stuff like that. The citizenship recognition in that regard. But yes, there is, one would question, is it still symbolic, similar to the apology, where there's an acknowledgement, but there isn't much substance or much change? And like you say, some of our mob, and I'm probably one of them that would question any real change, because we're still marginalised, we still get the discrimination. Yeah. We get the national legislation in the Northern Territory, the federal legislation in the Northern Territory for the intervention stuff. It's a bit like that United Nations. That United Nations policy there, the rights of the Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
Yeah.
If that, I think Les Melzer explained it to me on air and said, if that was then picked up in legislation, aspects of it embraced that the substance of that declaration, that's when you would see change, and that's what is required. So.
Yeah, I think Les has got a valid point, and by the way, Les was one of the speakers at that land summit here in Victoria that I mentioned in the introduction. But some states are a bit shy; they shy away a bit of the full recognition of that declaration, whilst the government. The federal government has recognised it, and you see parts of the key principles of the declaration filtering down into policy in the native title area, for example, that free, prior and informed consent, which is taken out of one of the declaration's principles, is now used frequently, you know, when native title claimants are negotiating settlement of their claims with the government. They say, look, it's not a valid agreement or determination unless native title claimants or traditional owners are, have the opportunity for free, prior and informed consent. So, look, but it's a bit, if you look at our state system, some are sympathetic towards the principles of the Declaration. Others have still not fully embraced it. Like Les, I think it's a very important document in the Declaration. And I'd like to see all states and territories, support it in a much stronger way than they have in the past.
Jeff Clark, another Victorian, was on this program a week or two ago, and he was saying, and we spoke on this topic, and he was saying, look, it's Tiger, he said, there is big opportunity here to talk more broader and not have the discussion so restricted and confined by the government, by the government's demands. They've stated, this is what you talk about and you don't go outside of that, is what he was saying. But he's saying the opportunity for First Nations people to sit around in their communities and discuss this issue of lack of recognition, the issue of the rights, all of this stuff. He said that should all be on the table. That's the opportunity we have now, but it's not happening. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think there are different approaches that the policymakers and the government takes on such a complex issue as this. There's the more targeted approach, and then there's the shotgun approach, where everything's on the table. But realistically, and like you and I have been around for many years, Tiger, realistically, are you able to deal with all the issues in one fell swipe? Mm. Sometimes that incremental approach or that gradual approach is sometimes more realistic. I hear what others who think that there should be a broader discussion. I hear what they're saying, but at the same time, it's very difficult to just try and resolve all those complex issues in one go. So
yeah, I don't know they want to find resolution for everything, but I think if everything's discussed, you'll filter it. It'll filter down through to a few key principles that may well find themselves in the Constitution. I think that's what I interpret or read into statements of some of this mob. Not trying to resolve everything, but discuss everything by all means, or the issues. Discuss all the issues. Don't just pick one or two. Discuss all the issues, and then a few key principles should be able to filter through out of that. And if that's the case, it's probably the a prime opportunity. Look, what's your thoughts on the Republican structure or alternative to a republic state? That's been raised as well for discussion. What are your thoughts?
I think Australia will inevitably become a republic. I think that's imminent, and I support that. I support that notion because, we've grown up under the legacy of colonisation, and, some would say that there's neo-colonisation that still impacts on Aboriginal people's lives. The main driver of the colonisation was that structure, brought out from England. I could see some merits of that structure, but I don't think it's appropriate now for Australia, say, in the 21st century. It might have been relevant back in the 19th and 20th century, or early part of the 20th century, but I think as we're living in the 21st century, Tiger, I think it's time to move on. And the sooner we become a republic, I think the better.
I was talking to one of my mates. He happened to grow up, I think he said, in Calcutta. He's an Indian man. And he said, you know that crown that queen wears around? I said, yeah. He said, it's got the world's biggest diamond in it, that crown. He said, you know where that diamond came from? I said, no. I didn't even know there was a diamond in it. He says, they stole it from my people.
Yeah.
That diamond was stolen during their period of colonising India. And they wear it around in this crown, stolen jewellery. I mean, I was shocked to think that they could so brazenly wear this diamond around and hold it so sacred and all. So I just made my guts turn, to tell you the truth. But anyway, that's just a little piece of history there, I suppose, or information.
Yeah, it not only happened there, did it, Tiger?
That's right.
It happened wherever colonisation occurred. And it just wasn't the the English Empire that carried out those activities. There was a lot of the other.
Well, the French, the Dutch, the Portuguese,
the whole Spanish. Yep. But the Elgin marbles. There's a perfect example of what do they call it? Appropriation of cultural objects, and
that's right.
That went on under that under the auspice of the empire, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Look, we're getting close to news time here. Anything you want to say in winding up, encouraging people to participate, to think about, engage? What would you say to people?
I think the key issue I'd like to sort of wind up on is the need for the reform, native title reform. And one particular issue is the reversal of the onus of proof of people's connection to country.
Yes.
Why should Aboriginal people who have been here for thousands of years be put through a rigorous process like the Yorta Yorta and others have been put through to have the First Nations people prove?
Yes, it's their, outrageous.
Ownership and custodianship of the land. I'd like to see in the present reforms on native title that are being foreshadowed, that being front and centre.
Good one. And, a lot of people agree with that, mate. A lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a good point to wind up on. Thanks very much, Graham.
Good on you. Yeah, thanks, Tiger.
And we'll talk again. Thanks, mate. You have a good day.
Yep.
Bye now. Graham Atkinson, member of the ILC Board, Indigenous Land Corporation Board. He is the chair of Native Title Services Victoria and the chair of Jajarung, traditional owner group down there in Victoria. And it's a good point to wind up onto the Native Title, talk about reform, constitutional reform, Native Title legislation needs reform. And the key point in there is reverse the onus of proving ownership. That should be the government proving that they have the right to impose their system on First Nations people and their lands, not have First Nations people prove that they continue to have that connection to their country. It's an outrageous position to be put in. Monday morning, we've got an outside broadcast from the State Library. It's the Tyndale exhibition down there, and we're broadcasting from State Library. Let's Talk will come from there. Tomorrow, Karen Durante will be hosting the program. Make sure you join her on your First Nations station. Have a great day.